Welcome to Final Final, the podcast for brand storytelling and other conundrums. I'm Heather McDee. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Today, we are talking to Robin Gruen, who is Vice President of Brand Marketing and Content Strategy at Lee Enterprises. I actually know Robin pretty well. We worked together many years ago in publishing when we both worked for the Tribune in branded content. So I've had the pleasure of getting to know her in a work capacity, in a personal capacity. I think she is just incredible and has so much to share as a person, a human being, and as a professional. So I wanted to ask her on to kind of talk about her experiences throughout her career as a storyteller for brands. So Robin, thank you for coming.
What a lovely intro. I was like, do that every day for me.
Yes, I'm here to, you know, we're all about good self-esteem here, about how wonderful everyone is. But Robin, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. So I say that I'm kind of a woman in reinvention mode every 5 years. And I think that's because the industry and what I do shifts and changes every 4 to 5 years. So I say I'm a natural born storyteller. I've been telling stories since I was little. In the second grade, my teacher told my parents at back to school night, Robin's either going to be a writer or the president of the United States. And clearly one came true and the other did not. And so, you know, that's what I do. I tell stories for clients. I was an editor turned publicist, turned now brand marketer. The world of content marketing has changed so much in 10, 12 years that my role and my job and how I go about the business has changed so much too. But a little bit about me is just that. I mean, I'm a passionate storyteller. I love telling stories about people, about clients, about work, about myself, about my kids, maybe too many stories about them. And I like to have fun doing it.
Now, you've worked with, just because of the type of roles that you have crafted for yourself throughout your career, you've worked with so many different kinds of brands over the course of your career and your life. Can you kind of talk a little bit about what kind of storytelling you've seen as being the most effective for some of these brands?
Absolutely. That's a really good point. So personally and professionally, I always urge clients, regardless of the type of brand you are, and whether you're B2B or B2C, to be authentic and human. Especially right now, I thought I would stop saying because of COVID a year ago, but it's still, right? Because of COVID, which is still going on, we as humans feel more of a need to connect with brands, whether it's an electrician or where we buy our groceries or, I mean, literally anything we do, from real estate to finance to healthcare, everything that we do, we have to feel a sense of connection. So I believe that the best stories are those that feel authentic, human, and enable whomever you're trying to reach to connect to you. And so I think that makes for the most powerful and best storytelling.
Something that I've noticed, you know, just building on that, I think everyone's really aware how, you know, I think we were already trending in this direction, but COVID really pushed us like years into the future in terms of authenticity. You know, now like it's impossible. Your kids are going to be on camera at times. People are going to see your life at times with everybody working from home. Even now, many people are still in a hybrid model. And so it just really pushed us into a hyper authentic situation in terms of our overall life. Do you think that affected the way, do you think that, speaking to the point you just made, do you think that made that even more critical?
Oh my gosh, yes. Because I think what happened during COVID, and you're right, it pushed us. It also attached us so much more to social media, computers, and the world of the internet, right? Whether we want to be there or not, whether we want our kids there or not. And so what it did is it made us, as if we take off our hat as a marketer or an advertiser or a creative or a strategic human, and you just put on your hat of human, you have access to so much more. and you realize that there's so many options out there for everything that you want to do. And we have a little bit more time to do that because we're at home more and we're in front of our computer more and we're buying on Instagram at night in bed on their phone, right? I mean, we're all kind of the same in that way, that as a species, it's become so much more important to be authentic. Otherwise, we sniff it. We can tell it's not real, and we don't want to work and be with people and buy from people and, you know, do anything with people who don't seem their authentic self. And it's why I think it's so important for brands to stay true to their message, to stay true to their mission. The minute that you deviate and, you know, have to play off, today happens to be National Suns Day. Not every brand should be talking about National Suns Day, right? It doesn't make sense. It's not authentic to who they are. But there are some brands that should really capitalize on that because that is who they are. And that is that authentic moment. So it might not be the best example, but this idea of being your truest self all the time is really important for brands.
Yeah. I mean, it just makes me think about, I know I've had so many conversations with my colleagues and with other people that the whole idea that you turn into a different person when you go to work, you know, this idea that like your life stays at home and it's almost like we used to treat people like they change into a different, you know, everything at home stays home, everything at work stays at work. And we know that's not really how life works. And it feels like that idea has now expanded to every area of brand storytelling. Like you can't just separate things and it has to feel authentic. It has to feel real and you can't control things as much as I think we used to want to.
I totally agree. And I think we are a little bit more accepting of accidents and mistakes, and because we're all making them all the time, we're kind of living in this world of like disruption, where that used to be like a buzzword for in the content space, right? Like, let's be disruptive or stunty. Now that's like the everyday. I mean, I might have to go into a closet to do work with a client, you know, on Zoom in order to avoid the chaos that's going on outside my door, right? And I think that the same is true of brands. They're in moments of chaos and they have to stay true to what that means for them.
Now, one thing that I can remember, I think this was one of the very first conversations you and I had many years ago. And I think one of the biggest things I learned from you from working together is how to write this little bit of a turn, how to write a strategic narrative. Like you were really good at, I remember you were one of my mentors at that time, really helping me marry the idea of strategy with storytelling, that those go hand in hand and are deeply integrated. And a big part of that is defining what's our messaging in a strategic way. Can you kind of talk about what that is and how you use it in your work?
I love that. I just got the chills. I have to be honest with you, Heather, because I talk about that all the time, right? You know, people are always saying, oh, I just want a big idea. I want a creative idea. I want something like big and let's throw it against the wall and see if it sticks. And I really stay rooted and grounded in this idea of what are the reasons to believe? What are those RTBs, right? And so I now talk in terms of messaging triangle, messaging track in order to develop that narrative, that strategic narrative. So the way that I go about it is I kind of list out the value propositions about the brand or about the campaign, whatever the focus is going to be. And what are those value propositions? And then I look at what maybe the competitive set is doing in that area. And I find that really special white space that gives permission for that brand to hone in on what their message is going to be. And then to really bake out, how do we talk about it? So whether that's pillars or buckets, and that's why I was saying the triangle, I think that most brands probably have 3 to 4 things that they should be talking about all the time in order to attract the right audience, consumer, patient, whatever we want to say. So the way that I go about that is literally framing a story, pretending this brand is a person. Susan, let's call her Susan. And Susan is here to help do what? X, Y, and Z. And how does Susan do that? With X, Y, and Z. And who is she trying to help? X, Y, and Z. And then that kind of frames a story for then the big, cool creative idea to sit on, so that the story is the heart of what that content or brand or creative strategy becomes. It gives it legs, it gives it foundation, and then it gives it a reason to exist and then for others to believe.
Yeah. And I think I remember up until that point, and you know, now, like, I think it's deeply ingrained. I know for me, and I know it is for you, that sometimes the conversation goes straight to the tactics or into conversations that, and now I can spot it when someone's like, oh, this would just be really cool. It's like, that's not the way we should be talking about this. What are we trying to achieve? What's the message we're trying to put out there? That needs to be confirmed first, and then we can go into tactics. And what's the way we're going to tell the story?
100%. I remember when I first joined Tribune. So that's going back to, I think, probably 2014-ish. And I remember sitting in a big meeting and we were talking about a specific client. And the sales rep at the time said, oh, the client wants to do video. And this is going back to 2014 when, sure, who doesn't want to create video? But I was like, what kind of video? Like, what's the goal? Why video, right? Oh, because they want video. They want to do video. Well, that's not really a strategy. Like, I want to do video. If the strategy is I need to reach a new audience, millennials, let's say, and I need to reach them where they are, okay, on their phone or social media, maybe video is the right strategy. But maybe it's not, right? And so you're absolutely right. People throw out these things like, I need to do PPC. I need to do this. I need to do that, without understanding, okay, what actually is the overall goal? If you start with the goal, and that's anything in life, right? I want to eat healthier, okay? I want to eat healthier. So then what are my tactics? I'm going to buy more fruits and vegetables and whole grains, right? It's the same for a client and a business. What is the goal? And then let's back into how we get there. And if it's video or it's content and it's storytelling, how do we then get people to watch it, read it, engage with it? And that's your distribution tactics. So yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, we have to think end goal and then work our way to what becomes the heart of what that is.
Yeah, for sure. Now I'm going to pivot just a little bit into, you know, word of the moment here. Pivot into, you have a really successful track record leading creative teams, award-winning, strategically successful for your clients that you've worked with over the years. And one thing that is very obvious to anyone who has been within 100 miles of Robin Gruen, you know, you have a lot of energy and enthusiasm for your work, for your teams, for your people, for your life. And it's really, I think one of the things that makes you unique and really great as a leader, and you share that with your teams and the people that work with you. Can you kind of talk a little bit about your approach as a leader of creative teams? Like, what do you think about when you are trying to lead, mentor your teams?
Well, first of all, thank you. That is so sweet. I honestly believe that the best way to lead a creative team is to be open. So I'm not a designer by trade. I'm not a videographer by trade. I'm literally just a plain old writer by trade. So having that appreciation for the creative full circle approach and knowing that there are experts, they might be 12 years my junior, or 18 years my senior, but the experience and the value that they bring to the conversation makes a team. I believe that the best leadership style comes from openness and appreciation and validation of others' thinking and process and being able to learn from those that you mentor makes you a better leader. Heather, you're a great example. When you came to Tribune, you came with years of experience in something I had zero experience in. And within just 2 years, even of us working together, even 1 year, I was able to speak a little bit of Heather and a little bit more video because I listened to it. I didn't say to you, this is the way that we're going to do creative and this is how you're going to run it. I was open to this idea that the reason you were coming to work at Tribune was to learn a little bit from me about the writing and about that type of storytelling, but for me to gain from you the knowledge that you had in your past. And so, I mean, that's what I bring to work every day. My own passion, yes. My own energy, yes. But the idea that I am going to learn every day from the people that I surround myself with, remotely or in person, is so important. The minute you stop doing that and you stop wanting to learn from others and be mentored and mentor is the minute that it's time to honestly pivot, to use your word. That's when it's time to get a new job, rethink the career, and hit pause, because ultimately you're killing probably the creative energy of the group when you do that anyway.
Yeah. Well, and you're making me think about two things that I know these have been, you know, things I learned from you and then also been validated at other points along my career that you're making me think about in terms of leadership. Are one, prescriptive leadership is kind of the worst thing you can do, because then why do you have a team? You know, then it's about you. It's about your own ego. It's about, you know, best at all times. And you're really defeating the purpose of having a team at all in the first place. The other thing you're making me think about too, and I read this somewhere, I apologize because I don't know who said this, but it stuck with me. There was some leader of creative teams and he said, my strategy in hiring creative teams is I look for people who are better at what they do than I am. And that really stuck with me. And I think that's a great way to think about, you know, as we're building teams, like I know I think about it when I'm hiring, like who are the people that are better at writing, better at creative tactics, designing, strategy, you know, people that are actually better at it than me, because I don't know, like this whole idea that the person who is leading the team is the best at everything is really unrealistic and limiting and ego driven. And so I think flipping it the other way around is so much more effective in all ways.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, there's two things that come to mind with those things that you said. And one is this lesson that I learned very early on in my career. And it was to never use the word I when talking. And I know we've even had this conversation, Heather, especially like when you're communicating with a client and, you know, I think blah, 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 I da, 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 da. It should always be we, because it puts this emphasis on partnership, not only you and the client, but you and your teammates, right? Because it's very rare that you're out there as a party of one battling, you know, a creative process with a client. I mean, that's just not the truth. Now, you might be the face of it and the client might think, okay, Robin, or okay, Heather, but ultimately it's a team of we.
Yeah. And in the end, you know, as you look at the infrastructure of a team, you know, because that's something that we all always have to be thinking about as, you know, we go through time and the needs of the business grow. Think about, you know, the makeup of your team and what we're poised to deliver. What I always think is interesting is when I think it feels good whenever you look across your team and there are a number of people who could step in as a leader in a bunch of different ways on a bunch of different days. We all usually have our own craft, you know, whether it's video, writing, strategy, design. And so what's interesting is knowing that we bring those different perspectives to the different kinds of leadership that we fulfill, even, you know, on an IC level, someone who's a people manager. And when you look at it overall as a forest, you know, the whole thing about there's individual trees in the overall forest, it makes up a really interesting, powerful team, I think, because you have all different kinds of perspectives that really come together in a powerful way.
Totally agree.
Now, another thing I love about you is that you are also absolutely authentic. You kind of nodded to that a little bit earlier. You know, we hear, I feel like anyone who has had a job for more than a year or two has some sort of conversation about managing your personal brand. I know that for me, sometimes there is a balance between being real. I know for me, I kind of bristle at the idea of managing your personal brand. It's like, well, we should all just be ourselves. We should all just be human. And hopefully who you are is good. You know, hopefully you're a good human. And then it's fine. But I know there's always a balance between being real and then thinking about how you show up at work. And you do have to think about those things to be successful in your career. What are your thoughts on that?
God, I mean, it's so true. So my thoughts are, and I am kind of big on a personal brand, I'll be honest with you. I think the same way that I kind of said, brands should know why they exist and should only be speaking that way. I feel the same way about my personal brand. So people who follow me on Facebook know exactly what they're going to get on Facebook from me. It's different than what they're going to get on Instagram, and it's different from what they're going to get on LinkedIn. And I'm thoughtful about that. And I think it's because I'm the same person through all three platforms, but what I share and my points of view might change depending on the medium, just like it should for a brand, right? What a brand does on Instagram doesn't need to be the same as what a brand does on Facebook or on LinkedIn, for example. I think my personal brand is very true to how I approach business, right? It's messy sometimes. There's kid shit that happens that you don't want to happen, and it happens, and I just have to be honest and own it. There's stuff that happens in your personal life that sometimes has to get out there and be told because it's real and it helps people see you in that authentic light, right? The same way we talk about for brands. And so for me, my personal brand is transparency. It's who I am. Anybody who hires me, fires me, loves me, hates me, works for me, respects me, admires me, I'm kind of an open book. There's very little that is different about what I bring to work than what I bring to home. I would say that doesn't work for everybody. I've been lucky that somehow it has worked for me. And I think it's probably the authentic piece of it, Heather. I think it's that if I'm having a bad day and, you know, I don't look my best or seem my best, it's relatable and it's authentic because it's not every other day, right? It's not all the time. And that's good. People need to see you as human. The same way we need to see brands as to humanize a brand is the same way as real people. And so, you know, to me, my personal brand, like I said, it is important. And it's something that I think is becoming more and more important the more we put ourselves out there on social. Only put out there what you want people to receive and see. And that's important.
That makes sense to me. Well, and more I think about too, with the way that you put it, because I am connected to you. I mean, I've been connected to you as a colleague, on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. So I've seen you on, you know, and I know you in those different lights. And what is true about you is that you are definitely yourself on all those platforms. Like there's no incongruity between any of those channels. But yes, the way you say things, the way you put things might be different, but what you are saying is the same and consistent. That's and right. True. No, that's interesting. Okay. So you, like me, we've had maybe multiple decades of career behind us. So with that significant of a career, you know, what is one of the biggest lessons you've learned over the course of your career?
I think the use of the term we is huge. I think, and Heather, I think we share this in common. We're both pretty quick, and that can be a gift and a curse. It can be like your kryptonite and your superpower all at once. I've learned to slow down, to think about things from a different perspective, to maybe not hit send right away, to think it over, to reread it. Also, I try not to hit send after certain hours at night after a few too many glasses of wine, because then I look back in the morning and I'm like, oh my gosh, why did I do that? So, you know, the biggest lessons I've learned, I would say, are the use of we, to go a little bit slower, to ask for forgiveness rather than permission every time. It's okay to move forward and do something and then be like, oops, I wasn't sure that that was right, because it might work out in your favor. I also, and you know this about me, Heather, anybody who knows me knows this about me. I really believe as women, we wear many hats and we do it well. And I think using that to our advantage really helps. I think women have to stick together. Women have to raise each other up. I'm not saying you should have an all-female team, although there's nothing wrong with an all-female team. But I think a lesson in women being strong but soft is okay, Because too often it's assumed if I'm a strong woman, I'm a bitch, but a man is a boss. We need to erase that sort of mindset, you know, the idea that women say, I'm sorry, but a man doesn't say sorry. Men have no problem asking for more money. Women, we struggle with it. So I think it's a really important lesson for women in the creative strategy, any field, to sometimes think more like a man would think about things. But I think that that's an important lesson.
Yeah, it's funny because you can, so many of those things, you can look at it from multiple angles. I know for me, there've been definitely times in my career where I've had to kind of sit down and think about it. And, you know, and almost when I've been presented with a conundrum that I wasn't sure how I was going to deal with it. And there, where I suspected maybe my gender was coming into play in certain ways that I didn't love. But I remember I would have to sit down and think about it, be like, okay, first of all, what's the flip of this? Like, how would a man or someone else handle this? And then on top of that, how do I want to handle this in a way that is authentic? So I'm still being myself. And like, what's the Venn diagram of that? And sometimes by thinking about it that way, that kind of helped me figure out how to handle it, because I don't want to not be myself, but I also don't want to be, you know, saying no to myself. Like, we do that so often. We say no to ourselves, you know, instead of asking for more money, asking for the budget, advocating for your big idea, advocating for your big strategy, doing something that's right for you or that you feel confident is correct for your client or your brand or your team. So often we just say, okay, you said no once, instead of really being persistent about it when we are confident. And it's also the difference between I think and I know. The day that I learned to think about it that way, like when I had an opinion and then somebody, it might've been you actually said, well, do you think that, or do you know that? I'm like, I know it. And you're like, okay, well then that's what we're doing.
100%. And I think everything that you just said was so spot on too, about your personal approach to things. So me, you know this about me, anybody who knows this about me. I like wearing very high heels. I like wearing clothes that are not over the top, but are not too, I'm not conservative at all in the way that I dress. And that's just who I am. So I have to be okay. Like, I don't dress that way for men or for a client. I dress that way for me because I can walk in a room and be like, I own this room with my hot pink heels, and it makes me feel like a power woman, right? I'm not doing it because that's what we're supposed to do. And I think that's really important because, again, men don't have to think this way. They just don't. It's assumed. They walk in the room and they own it. We have to kind of command that a little bit more.
Yeah. And you're making me think too of, so there's people out there, I feel like most people know who this is, Bazoma St. John. She actually has something to say about early in her career. She figured out, she said, you know, I love bright red lipstick. I love to dress boldly. And instead of making myself smaller, I'm going to be every inch of who I am. And that's going to work for me. And you know what? It does. You know, and that was really inspiring to me, that it wasn't, she worked against like fitting yourself into the box of what is appropriate or the way you're supposed to be. And she's found a way to be authentically herself while also being successful. And that is, I don't want to dismiss, like, that's hard to do, you know, cause there are a lot of times when you can't control all of it and you have to do a little bit of, it's just kind of the situation a lot of women are in. You kind of have to like skirt the middle to be as much of yourself as you can, and then also succeed. And it really shouldn't be that way, but it kind of is at times.
Yeah. I agree.
Okay. And then the last thing I just want to ask you are, what kind of advice, you know, as we are ending this conversation, you know, is there any type of big takeaway or advice that you'd want to give to other brand storytellers out there?
Yeah. I think it's a lot of what we've talked about, but I think it's worth mentioning. I think being authentically true to who you are. Clients see that. Clients know that. Clients buy your passion. They buy your energy and they buy your authenticity. And so it's okay to disagree with a client sometimes. They like that. They feel that sense of partnership. So I would say the big takeaways, be authentic to who and why you have a seat at the table. Own that. Be good with it. And be okay to, as you said earlier, Heather, like, say what you feel. I know this to be true, right? I know this to be the case. I would also say, be open to other people's ideas. The same way that I go about leading a team of creatives, that I can't do a lot of the work, right? It's not in my wheelhouse. It's not in my skill set. But being open to the idea of learning and growing and transforming is really important at all times. And then I would say another big takeaway in the world of brand storytelling is to be okay shifting the way you've told stories. So for a long time, I really resisted certain things in the social space for clients. And there wasn't a reason I resisted it. It was just, it was hard to learn or new to learn or not the way my brain had been trained to think. And I'll be honest with you, the best thing you can do for a client is be open to innovation and be open to the idea that telling a story can be done in many ways. And being open to that is better for the brand, it's better for you, and it's better for the team. And so, whereas it once was in the world of content marketing, articles were what the thing was, now, honestly, not so much. And I'm a writer at heart. And that's, you know, what I have a love affair with is the words, but not even so much anymore. Now it's about what makes a story. And it's so much more than the words. The words are a piece of it, but the story is really so many other elements. So I think being open to innovating the way we even think about a term like content or stories is so important.
That's great. Thank you so much for talking to us today. I appreciate you making the time.
Thank you. I loved it.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. And we will talk to you next week. Bye.